Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hi, I'm Chaz Smith, and I hate surfing. Someone who does not hate surfing is one Damien Hobgood. Now, Damien Hobgood sits in surfing's grand Valhalla, next to his twin brother CJ, across from Richie Collins. The fearless Goofyfoot was born and raised in Florida, making a mark on the surf scene right away. He surfed on tour for 14 years, was a staple of the iconic Joji Globe surf films, and is here today to share wisdom and grace with you. Without further ado, Damien Hobgood.
We're in Europe, right? I can't believe we're doing this in Hossegar.
That's why we have wine. That's very professional.
Even this glass, cheers. Yeah.
Damo's solo session at 12-foot Greenbush almost a decade ago, and described by Dion Agis as, quote, the most insane, courageous performance I've ever seen. He was an animal. Apparently, Damo made giant drops beyond the vertical axis and got into barrels that were so big, even if a camera had been there, it wouldn't have been able to translate its enormity into pixels.
So their Karamas contest was going on, and I ended up losing. And those guys were over in Macaroni's Resort. And I just looked, I don't really know. I'd never gone to Greenbush in my life, but I always really wanted to go there. Because even more of a backstory, when I was a kid, I've still yet to ask Martin Daly, when I said, hey, let's go check this bay out on one of his old trips. And he's like, nah, dude, I've been in there. There's nothing good. I'm like, dude, you sure? I'm like, dude, let's just go check it out. And he's like, dude, it's not. It's like a closeout. And I was just like, oh, okay. And we kept sailing. And I still kind of remember this point. Like, dude, did he really not think Greenbush was a wave? Or did he just not want me to go there? And so I never surfed there. And I was like, I really wanted to surf there. I looked like a crazy wave. So then I was like, hey, guys, I know you guys are out there. I'm jumping on a flight. I'm going to jump on this ferry, have the speedboat come pick me up. But by the way, if it looks good, I'm going to make the guy go in there and I'm going to surf. So if there's waves like it should be, this could be the day. Just meet me there. And that was kind of like the only communication we had. And then I left, went on the journey. Like most people, you get to put on or whatever, then you jump on that ferry and you go out, and the speedboat was there to grab me. And so I was like, yeah, this is sick, dude. These guys got it. Like, I got my boat, I'm ready. So he starts going, and I'm seeing the swell lines, and I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, it's on, dude. So I'm like, oh, the guys will probably be there. And then he starts going, and the guy was like, he was trying to tell me no, like, no, I'm not going to go in there. Like, I think the guys are here. And I'm like, no, no. And I'd already remember, like, Martin Daly doing that to me before, like, when I was, like, 15 or 16. So I was like, no, dude, this ain't going down. I'm like, no, dude, my friends are in there. We got to go in there. So finally, like, basically make him go in there. And he just wanted to show me that no one was in there. But when he was driving the boat, he wasn't looking. So I'm pulling my boards out. I'm sticking fins in. I'm waxing up. And I'm thinking, and then like he goes to turn around. He's like, see, no one's here. You know? And I'm all, thanks, bro. And I jump off the boat. And I knew once I was off the boat, he's probably not gonna leave me, you know? And I was thinking the guys are gonna show up. And it was bombing. I was scared. You know, it was like, it reminded me of Chopu a lot. And I was like, wow, because it was weird, because I remember it being like this peak, like kind of coming in this peak, but that day was like, and you can see some videos now, and I think you get a lot of the video of when Nick Von Rupp and his buddy went and surfed there. So it was like that. You can see when it hits that next level, it doesn't really wedge up. It just becomes this long, like, more like a Chopu type thing. And yeah, I surfed by myself. I was pretty scared on a lot of them, but it was an unreal session.
Was that during the Globe filming, or no? This was
so those guys were there, and they were supposed to be filming,
but they weren't there.
And I just said, hey, look, meet me there.
Yeah,
like meet me there. I'll be there, and uh, And I was like, hey, look, if it's good, I'm not going by it. Like, I'm going to, because I was worried that that was going to be the day, and then the next day would be too small, or like the wind or something was going to be wrong. And then, so then basically I just surfed my brains out the whole day, but I kept thinking they were going to show up. I'm like, They're probably going to show up. I bet they'll show up. Then finally it was like 1 o'clock and I'm like pretty surfed out. It was a long day. It was like, and I was like, well, maybe they're not showing up. And the wind started coming up a little bit. And so I was like, and the boat driver was getting so over me by then. And so finally I paddled back to the boat and jumped on the boat, went back. And then I saw him at the dock and I was all, dude, where were you guys? And like, I almost couldn't even tell him. I'm like, where were you guys? Like, dude, we thought the wind was off. We thought it was this and that. And then, and they're like, it was good, huh? And I was all, yeah, dude, it was like freaking good. But I didn't want to like bum out too much. And I was like, dude, it'll probably be good tomorrow. Like, whatever, it'll be good tomorrow. And then the next day we went there and it was still pretty good. It'd come down a little bit. And then that's when we shot all that footage.
So Dion described you as a man possessed. And rode one wave Dion described looking like Black Death. Do you remember that wave?
I don't really remember, but I was just thinking like it looked like death the day before.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is actually pretty fun. You know, like this is more manageable. You know, a little more, and I kinda like understood what the wave was doing a little more But yeah, I was stoked. It was an unreal sesh.
Where did you get the taste for that kind of wave? Growing up, being born in Florida, like where did the hell charge? I mean, because I think both you and CJ have developed that reputation of a fearlessness. Where did that come from?
I'm not sure. I kind of just think that more along the lines of like, hey, I might never see this wave again. I might not ever have this opportunity again. Let me just go see what happens, you know. Kind of almost the same way of when I pulled in the bay that morning, and I was just like, dude, I don't care, no one's here. I might never see this wave again. Tomorrow's not a guarantee. It could be blown out and flat. Like, I'm just going to go out.
Okay, continuing on with Dion. I asked Dion what we could learn from Damo, and he said how to be a man and an awesome, loving, caring gentleman that is also tough and strong and crazy as the manliest of men. Dion Aegis.
Oh, thank you, Dion. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see here. We say, talk about the day dealing in fear, those little increments between terrible injury and immense satisfaction. So when it's pumping that way, and you're really sending it, what is your mental either game or your process of like what's going on mentally?
Well, I mean, I think we're, you know, in life in general, we're always playing like the risk to reward, you know, in general, like I could risk this and this could happen. Is the reward good enough? You know? So I think we're always kind of playing that. But then once you kind of do that math and you're like, I could get the wave of my life, like this might happen, but I could get the wave of my life. To me, that's worth it. And then you're able to kind of like push the fear and the risk kind of to the side, you know. But I think the hard part is when you think it's too risky and the reward's not good enough, and then you're trying to fight through that. I think that's where it becomes hard.
What are the times on both sides, I suppose, that you've sent it where you realized it wasn't worth it, and then likewise where you pulled back and thought, and have been haunted? Do you have any hauntings?
Oh, totally. I mean, I got a lot of hauntings, you know? Yeah, I mean, just anytime you like maybe didn't put yourself in the good spot of the wave or like, you know, I mean, probably the biggest haunting is when I was like next to CJ on that big Chopu wave and I didn't go. And then he went and I was all... And I played it in my mind like it looked like a closeout. And so that's why I was like, oh, dude, look at that closeout. You don't want to go. But then I was like, dude, you're probably just scared, you know? And then so, I think there's a lot of times I've kind of pulled back. I think like for me more, it's like when you're kind of asking yourself before it all goes down. Like once you're on the beach and you're like, dude, I want that, and the risk is worth it, then kind of whatever happens past that is kind of like okay. I think what the hardest part is when you're like, dude, I don't know if this is worth it. I don't know. And you're like, well, whatever, I'll just go do it. And then you kind of do something stupid, then that's when it like really haunts you.
Yeah.
You know? And I think we do that in all in life, right? Whether it's like we're snowboarding or we're gonna go skateboard or we're gonna do anything, it's like
sit down and write something really stupid. Haunts me.
Okay, there you go.
Long Tom, you know Long Tom, Steve Shear, great surf journalist.
Okay.
You know Long Tom?
I'm not sure.
Steve Shear. He's a great Australian, like the best Australian surf journalist. Describe CJ and Damo's relationship as a tale of competitiveness and Greek tragedy, like Andy and Bruce. A relationship as tale of competitiveness and Greek tragedy, like Andy and Bruce, but more a classic hero's journey. Discuss the relationship with your brother. Is it tragic?
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I think all of our relationships have kind of come out of the relationship I've had with my brother, where a lot of people can't understand like that you can actually not necessarily agree with someone, not even really like the person, but like you could still totally love the person. You could still have this like really like deep foundation of being there for each other. But like in a sense of almost like at times like kind of despising each other in a sense. And most people can't understand that. And they almost don't even know how to, they almost don't know that two of those can live together, you know? And because I was able to have that with my brother, a lot of relationships past that were kind of easy, you know? Like, I'll use you and I, for example. Like, dude, I feel like we have a great relationship. Do I agree with most stuff you say? Heck no. Do I even like maybe like how you do it necessarily? Like, no, but I'm like, dude, the guy's different. He does things differently. Like, cool. Like, that's totally fine. And I think even on that sense, like, people even tripped out on like, well, how do you do that? You know, like, well, dude, like, you can have a great relationship with someone and like, you don't want someone thinking like you think. You don't want someone believing everything you think. Like, or wouldn't that be kind of lame? You know, like, I just don't, you know, and I think that's even just a bigger story in today's world in a sense. You know, it's like, I can't interact with you if you don't believe the way I believe. And I think through that process of my brother, I've been able to have some really, really good relationships that I probably would never have if I didn't understand that, you know?
I love that. Especially this day and age when everything is exactly. So like, if I don't agree with you politically, even like on one simple thing.
Yeah.
Atomic bomb to anyone that disagrees with me politically. It's wild. You're missing out on everything.
It's wild. I think about it and go like, wow, dude, you could have the best relationship with that person. And because that one little thing, like, stopped you, like, gosh, what are you missing out on, like you said?
Yeah.
And I think even on that, like, as a premise is why I enjoyed our relationship so good. It's just like, wow, dude, you thought that, or what the, like, well, it's interesting, you know? And like, I think that's where a lot of the beauty lies, you know, even to a point of like, even our competitors didn't know how to take it, you know, like, well, you guys were just yelling at each other and you just said, you wanted to rip his hat off. And like, dude, like, are you guys okay? You know, we're like, no, we were just kind of getting it out. Like, we were just like, we were trying to be like kids again. Like, cause when you're a kid, you actually do that to your best friend all the time. But like, and so it was like, so a lot of times it was hard for people to understand.
I love it.
You know.
Talk about CJ's accidental world title. Why was Damo surfing a pipe? while his brother was winning at sunset.
That was being selfish. It was being selfish and thought mainly getting a barrel of pipe was going to be way better.
Was it?
Not in hindsight, it wasn't. But when you're you know, probably a cocky little punk, it seems better.
Did it bug you that CJ won?
I was super stoked he won.
Yeah.
It kind of bugged me that I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It bugged me that I wasn't there to experience that moment, you know? I think it's no different than, when you look back on, any relationship or anything you do, you're like, dude, I was so selfish. Dude, I was a selfish punk for, I didn't even care about that person. That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, I've done selfish things before, and I'll probably do it again.
What was the emotional reckoning from films? It says here, quote, "What's on the other side of fear at Chopu is illustrated by Damo Hobgood in one of the most powerful passages in the film when he talks us through an almost fatal wipeout, describing putting his fingers into holes in his head after a collision with a reef and a cool divine breeze flowing through a deeply altered state of consciousness as his life swung in the balance. The post-traumatic impact is hinted at when Damo phones his mom Maureen in a scene of deep emotional reckoning."
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that time?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Describe.
You guys are making me sound really cool, so I appreciate that. Yeah, I've just been serving a long time, bad wipeout. I thought someone was going to go, and then they pulled back, and then I was like, oh, I can go. And then right when I was like, oh, shoot, I don't got this. And then I also remember sitting at the top of the wave, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, dude, maybe I'll jump and try to jump out in front of the wave, as I'm going over the falls. And right when I thought well, this is going really slow, it felt like I'd jumped from a two-story building and then jumped, but intentionally landed on my butt. And then when I landed on my butt, I kind of felt like it was I just crumpled into the reef, but I must have flew back and hit my head. And then what I found out is I must have fell back and hit my shoulder and then my head. I must have just blacked out. I remember blacking out before at times, and you got the family photos go across, and then this super cool breeze, I felt blowing across my face, and then I came up in the lagoon, and that the tower was there because the contest was going to get built. The contest was going to be in a couple weeks, and I wanted to go over there early to get some practice. And I was kind of right next to the tower, and I kind of looked up and someone was there, and I was like, oh, and then I was just whoa, and felt my head, and then I was just and then I thought I threw my shoulder out because I had done that before, and I was just oh man, something gnarly just happened. I should don't panic, just be cool. All you gotta do is get to the shore. And I was just and that's what I just tried to do. And then as I was going to the shore, I think someone saw what happened and then came around and picked me up on the jet ski and then brought me to the boat. And I think it was probably more of a concussion in a sense, because I was super emotional. I remember laying on the boat and crying and wasn't, and I was like, gosh, why am I really so emotional about this, you know? And then it was kind of funny later on. I went and because I was starting to do free diving classes and trying to learn about holding my breath. One of the things, you see it when they're doing the free diving courses, if someone blacks out, they pull their mask off and they blow across their eyes. Because you have these sensors on your face that basically lets your body know that if you're above water, it'll wake up. And if you're below water, it'll just stay blacked out. And then once you use all your oxygen, that's when, that's why a lot of times if they can get you within 5 to 8 minutes, you'll be okay. But if your body stays under for that long, even if you're underwater, it will try to take its last breath, and that's when you take in the water. So I was like, wow, that was crazy. Like I felt that cool air go across my face and make me wake up. So I think that was that was kind of weird in the whole kind of sense of it. You know, when I looked back, I'm like, wow, that was interesting.
Do you look at all the recent, especially the pipeline this year has been brutal, right? Like injury after injury. Do you have any thoughts, or is just like, it's just bad luck sometimes. Some years luckier than others.
It does seem like it goes in waves for sure. Cause I remember when I was young, like staying at the Pipe House, and there was times where it felt like, cause they used to like land a helicopter in the elementary field and like fly the person to Honolulu. And I remember it feeling like there was a helicopter, like 1 year, it felt like the helicopter was landing like every other day. Mm-hmm. And then, and so I kind of think it's, yeah, some years are just weirder than others. And I think it's just really good. Everyone looks out for each other now, you know, and everyone's kind of paying attention and looking out and realizing like if everyone's kind of looking out for each other, it can be the difference of death or life.
What are your fears at night? What keeps you awake?
Yeah, I try not to like let stress or fear kind of run my life. You know, I think I kind of just try to let all the shit go. Like just, I was talking about a friend just a little bit ago. It's like, I want to say that might be the trick on life. If you can just like let it go and just like not even. So a lot of times I try to just let it go and not even think, you know, it's like, because I think if not, you don't sleep, you know? So I like to sleep. I love to sleep. I've mastered napping and, I can kind of take a nap anywhere. That's and I just, brilliant. Yeah. And I, that's.
I'm jealous of the nap anywhere.
Dude, most people are. And I'm like, don't you just feel like you gotta like reboot the system? Like you, even if they're like, but you didn't even nap. Like you just kind of went out for a second. I was like, oh, I just kind of was restarting the system. It was kind of messed up, you know? So yeah, I think I think people just freaking hold things too much. I don't know.
I love it. When you need to put your mind in a good place, what beautiful memories do you revive?
Yeah, so there's definitely beautiful memories. It usually starts with gratitude. Mm-hmm. Just really all the things I'm thankful for, all the beautiful things I've experienced. Maybe it's calling back on those sessions of just really, really cool moments, that's the trick on life too. And trying to make new ones too.
It's just starting. Do you have a fear of being broke?
Not so much for myself, but for my kids and stuff. You know, I kind of, I think it's wanting to provide like for them, but also in a sense of like not just making them work for it and earn it. But yeah, so you know, I like to provide. Most men like to provide in that sense, and so I think that's where the fear comes. I don't really totally feel like it comes from like a personal being broke, because it kind of feels like I can live anywhere and kind of do anything and not, and I don't really stress on that so much for myself.
I got worst case scenario in my mind of being in Vegas and dealing blackjack and living in some shit hotel and thinking, oh, I could do that. Worst case scenario, I'm pretty good. Okay, last one here. What childhood dreams have stuck with you?
Weren't fulfilled maybe, or were fulfilled, or...
Sure, or some. Is there anything that you wanted to be or do? Like your little baby demo.
Uh-huh.
Like, are you searching for something? Is there an experience? Is there a becoming? Rosebud?
Yeah. They kind of live in like weird parallels there, because like, you know, I feel like you should still be dreaming even as an older person, you know. You still should have dreams and aspire to do things, or you know, I'll look forward to something, you know, something like to achieve.
And, what is it? Okay, so what is that? What is the new dream?
And really, like, so the new dream is really just is like, it's kind of the opposite. And that's why I say it kind of lives in these two, because it's really like living like really simple, really just, it's almost opposite of what a dream looks like. It's like not feeling like you need to get something to like fulfill your life, or if I make this, then that'll be, you know, because when you're younger, I think a lot of times it's like, if I achieve this goal or this dream, then that's what's going to change my life and what's going to make me happy and like all these things. And that's great because it helps you achieve things. But I think as you start doing that, you kind of, your dream starts going the other way, on a sense of like, you really just want to enjoy each day. You want to take advantage of each day of like, hey, look, I want to go surf today because who knows, I might not even be able to surf tomorrow. Like, oh my gosh, I can go on this trip to go snowboarding in this mountain. Like, dude, I've never been to this mountain. Like, let's go, you know? And so it's like, so then it becomes this almost simplistic way of like, almost just like bringing everything back and just enjoying every moment and not thinking about this just dream that I got to achieve. So so nowadays that's what I do. I just go, gosh, like I should just take advantage of today, you know, and keep it simple. And yeah, there's not really any big dreams within that.
Fishing.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, it might just be going, I'm going to go fish tomorrow. Like, it might be just like, cool, I'm going to go fish. Like, take advantage of that. Hey, look, I drove down to the beach and the waves looked really fun this morning. And like, go on, get out and surf, you know? And like, and so they're, in my eyes, they're like dreams and they're really cool. But I know in everyone else's eyes, and it's even hard to even go like, oh man, what have you been up to? Like, what? And you're like, dude, it ain't really much. Like, it's not really that much to talk about. But for me, it's been rad. Like, I went down to Seaside and I surfed. And, you know, I went over here and this was like this weird little sandbar. And like, and, you know, and I went up to Mammoth and snowboarded. And like, dude, that was super cool. And like, dude, it was awesome. And most people are like, dude, the snow sucked. It was freaking Mammoth. Like, what are you talking about? And it was Seaside. Like, what? Like, don't you surf like really good waves? And you're like, no, but it was really fun. So it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's kind of like an oxymoron, I guess, on the dream sense.
I love the oxymoron. Ladies and gentlemen, Damien Hopgood.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.